This is Fresh Air. We end today's show by remembering Mickey Mantle. He died Sunday of cancer, which ravaged his body shortly after a liver transplant briefly saved him. He was 63. I spoke with Mantle in 1985, after the publication of his autobiography, The Mick. Mantle had one of the most illustrious careers in the history of baseball, but he often played in pain because of knee and foot injuries. I asked him if it was typical for baseball players to be in that much pain.
It was out of the ordinary, really, and I think probably exaggerated a little bit all the pain that I played in. I had to wrap my leg with about a 10-foot bandage. It was like a gauze on one side and rubber on the outside, and I would tape it from like my hip all the way down to my ankle, both of my legs, because I hurt the other leg too after that. And it looked like it was worse than it was. I looked like a mummy when I was getting ready to play, and I got a lot of press where they said, poor Mickey, you know, he can't do this, he can't do that. But I wasn't hurting as bad as they thought I was, probably.
When it became clear that you were going to be a great home run hitter, would you always go for the home run when you were up at bat?
Well, I went for the home run every time I swung at a ball. I was trying to hit it as far as I could. That wasn't just when I became a home runner. I was always a home run hitter from the time I was a kid. So that's all I like. I love to see how far I could hit a ball.
When you thought you had a home run, would you stand there and watch it, or would you just start running just in case?
The Reggie trot, I didn't do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you
no.
didn't do that.
In fact, I never tipped my hat or did the high five or anything like that. It always embarrassed me, really, to see the opposing pitcher. I hated to look at the opposing pitcher because I knew how he must feel, because I knew how I felt when he struck me out. You know, he didn't jump up and down and wave his hands and tip his hat when he struck me out. So why should I do all that when I hit a home run off of him?
It was in 1961, I think, that you and Roger Maris were both trying to break the Babe Ruth record of 60 home runs in one season. How important was it for you to try to break that record?
Well, anybody that ever played baseball, especially a home run hitter, would love to break that record, 61 homers. I tried it once before in 1956. I hit 52 homers. And going into September, I was way ahead of Babe Ruth's home run record. It looked like I might do it that year. And then Roger came along in 61, and me and him both was way ahead of Babe Ruth's record going into the last month. I got sick. I had a real bad cold, and I took a shot from some quack doctor in New York somebody sent me to. And I had to have my hip lanced, and I missed the last couple of weeks. But Roger went ahead and broke it. And I think probably that's the greatest single feat I've ever seen in pro sports, was Roger hitting them home runs, because I know how hard it is to do. The public is not only the public, but the press and everybody else is following you everywhere you go. And Roger is not an outgoing guy. He was, he was really backward. He don't like a lot of press or anything like that. So I realized what a thing it was for him to do to break that record. And, like, I wasn't there the last couple of weeks, but he had big splotches of hair coming out from his nerves, you know. So it was really hard for him to do it. And it, there should never be an asterisk by his record in the record book. He did something that I think was really hard to do.
The fans really rooted for him to break the record, but you say that once it was broken, they turned against him, and then they started giving you ovations. Can you explain the psychology that you think was motivating
the fans? I think probably the American public is always for the underdog, and they wanted me to break the record. If somebody was going to break Babe Ruth's record, they wanted it to be me, because I'd been there for all this long, you know, for a long time. Roger just came up, and the American public's like for the underdog all the time, and I was the underdog in that race. And when Roger finally did break the record, everybody started, up until that time, I'd been like the villain. You know, I'd taken Joe, or trying to take Joe DiMaggio's place and everything, and they'd been booing me all that time. And all of a sudden, Roger wins the home run contest. He hit 61 homers. They turned their wrath on Roger instead of me. And everywhere I went from then on, I was like the hero and Roger was the villain. So it really did help me a lot.
Did you learn to distrust fans because they were so fickle?
No, I learned right away that you can be a bum one day and a hero the next day. So you got to take them both. You know, if you strike out four times and they boo you, you got it coming. You know, but the next day you hit a home run with the bases loaded or get a single in the ninth inning and drive in the winning run, they forget about the four strikeouts. So I learned that early in life.
What did you think of your hero status in America? I mean, you were a symbol for, you know, just about every person, especially boys growing up in New York, and then across the whole nation, you were a symbol too. You were an American hero. You stood for baseball. You stood for, you know, what was good about the country. Was that a lot to live up to? Did it feel like you?
Well, yeah, you have to, you have to really watch yourself. I felt like I did anyway, and the Yankees always, you know, like I used to like to chew tobacco. And they made me quit chewing, or they asked me to, they couldn't make you not do it, but they asked me don't chew tobacco because, you know, it don't look like a Yankee, and the kids now, they look up to you. If I was drinking, I would try to stay out of sight. You know, I never did smoke because I was afraid. I did do a Camel commercial one time, and I always wished I hadn't have because my dad didn't like for me to do commercials like that. I don't think he would have liked for me to do a beer commercial. I did one of those. I did a lot of things that I felt bad about later on, but at the time, it didn't seem that important.
Yeah, that same time that you were the national hero, you were really doing a lot of drinking, too, and I think you were famous for your carousing among baseball players.
I'm more famous for it now than I was then. A lot of people are surprised when they read that book because they didn't know I even drank. And when you read the book, it sounds like I was an alcoholic, but that's the farthest thing from the truth. It's just that the fun that I did have through my baseball career was when I was drinking. I mean, I guess my personality came in a bottle, for as I know, because the stories that I tell in that book are probably 15 or 20 things that happened over 18 years. And if you read the book, it sounds like I was an alcoholic. And that's another – if there is a moral to that book – it would be for little league kids or kids in high school or college, anybody, in fact, to take better care of their bodies because guys like Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Stan Musial, all the guys that are really good and that are their names are at the top of the list in the lifetime statistics are guys that took good care of themselves and played 20 years. I was over the hill at 34 and had to retire at 36, and it's probably because I didn't take as good a care of myself as I should have.
Mickey Mantle, recorded in 1985 after the publication of his autobiography, The Mick.